previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
I hope I didn't offend you.
Oh, you didn't. Not for lack of trying, though.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 5, Coming Home. And now, I don't know who coming home.
Puberty.
Here are your hosts, Tari Arrieto and Sarah D. Bunte.
Sometimes wonder if the listeners are tracking, like, which episodes. It's very clear Dave just woke up for 10 minutes ago. Today's?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Control A.
David!
Well, I just had really a lot of strong coffee, so yay us. King.
Yeah. I feel like given the episode title, we should, I should prompt you to say what you did right before we started recording, because it's so true. Please, Sarah.
Oh, God. Yes, the episode title is Coming Home, and as I said moments ago, by all means, let's compare Kelly's amnesia struggle to the plight of a returning Vietnam veteran.
That wasn't the part I meant. I meant the other thing you said.
Oh, the season is my Vietnam.
Thank you. Oh, God. What if there were 19 seasons? Oh, my God.
Haven't there been? There have been 19 yes. seasons just in this episode. It's so
there have been 19
great.
Seasons worth of episodes already. That is for sure, given how fucking long they all are. But anyway, shall we begin?
Yes, let us.
All right.
Do so.
Let's start with our B plot. Kelly comes home to Donna's and David's unlove nest. Except by home, we mean the beach apartment, the only home she can remember. As we see, Sarah got a great shot of, for the visual aids, which you can see at previously.tv, of Donna and Brandon putting up the banner. And again, Donna is a literal baby.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like these, you know, brightly colored markers, like, welcome home, Kelly. Like, ugh. And there's balloons. Is she five? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is Donna five? Are we five?
Yeah. I also don't understand why, if Kelly remembers Jackie, and apparently she does, why she wouldn't leave the hospital to go live with her mother. Like, even if she doesn't remember the condo that Jackie currently lives in with Mel, like, that's still her mom. You know what I mean?
But whatever. Yeah. Like, go home with the people that you actually remember / mm-hmm. are responsible for you legally. Like, I just find it difficult to believe that her medical team would discharge her to the care of Dunsa. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I wonder what the power of attorney situation is here. If she, like, can't remember things like how to drive, for instance, you know, like, just because she remembers her Kierkegaard prof, that's not necessarily suggesting that she's okay to look after herself. I don't know. Anyway, as Brandon helps Donna hang the aforementioned shitty welcome poster, he claims it's only going to be temporary that Kelly's living here, which we'll see. And Jackie brings her home, having, as you can see in the visual aids as well, apparently stopped on the way home to get them both the same haircut because they've done this again.
Uh-huh.
Different color stories, but same shape. And Jackie's very solicitous of Kelly's comfort, but Kelly insists that she's fine. And Brandon asks if anything looks familiar. She says that he does and jokes about the vigil that he kept at her hospital bed. And he tries to flirt back, but they're both extremely awkward. And then Steve comes in to bring her flowers and try to act like himself at about a 6 scale of 1 to 10, which is kind of funny to see him tamp it down. And Donna, even though I was just giving her shit, is still Kelly's best friend and a good friend to all, as she's thoughtful enough to tell Kelly where her bedroom is. Like, the only person to think of this, Donna. Good for her.
Yeah. There's also a line where Kelly, like, tells someone where the bathroom is. She's like, I think. Yeah. She's like, it's probably down the hall since it's not right here. I mean, I thought that was funny inadvertently.
Yeah. So then out on the deck, Steve decides to be the opposite of helpful, asking Brandon why Kelly wouldn't have come home with him. And obviously very wounded, Brandon says this is the only place she remembers. And we hear this clip too.
She's going to get better, man.
Things are gonna get back to the way they were. She's not wearing my ring. The one on the chain. She must have taken it off. Come on.
Why is it funny every time?
And they keep, like, I feel like they started to know that it was totally inappropriate because they do it. This is like the fourth episode in a row that it's like plaintiff Piccolo. Da-na-na-na. Like, oh my God, what are you doing?
Oh, God. Yes. So after the inappropriate credits, Donna catches Kelly passive aggressively editing the couch cushions and tells her that's something they used to do, and kindly tells Kelly that it might not seem like she was remembering things, but she is. Kelly says she's paying less attention to what people tell her and more to her instincts, which Donna thinks makes sense, although clip three.
I feel really close to Valerie, too.
On the other hand, don't be afraid to question those feelings.
Not quite a heeing, but yeah.
Close enough. It was a heeing in spirit.
Either. Yes. Kelly makes a pleasant face, but doesn't really get the joke because duh. And then asks Donna if she loved Brandon. Donna says she did. Kelly is trying to remember how she felt, but she can't. And then in come David, Noah, and some guy we've never seen before. His name is Devin Taggart, and he's from a band called Cain Was Abel. I can't believe we have to keep talking about them because I hate them so much already.
And he looks like, he's like, I mean, Dan Cortez was budget Dan Cortez, but he's budget Dan Cortez, like short haired, soul patch.
He's
looking.
He's also been on the show before when he had long hair. He was from the episode with Wheelchair Bobby.
Oh my God.
He's like, hey man, what happened to you? He's that guy.
Oh, the budget flea from that episode?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
It's never mentioned if he was actually the same guy, although it's conceivable he could be playing the same character since, you know, he's still in David's orbit and they were like at the same party, but it's not mentioned.
I guess.
Same, same actor.
That would be kind of funny. There was like a web series about that guy, except not really because a little Breitbart over there, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to it. So Donna, they're playing at the Peach Pit After Dark this week. Donna's all tense about David not calling, and he says he was out late doing band stuff and told Devin that he could sleep at the apartment. Cool roommate alert. Donna hates this idea, given that it's Kelly's first week home, but Devin just wants to shower. And when he leaves, David is like, don't be mad, which too late and also not fair. And David sucks. Kelly insists that she doesn't mind. And when Donna's removed David to help her make the bed in Claire's old room, whose furniture is it? I would like to know. Doesn't come up. Kelly is left with Noah and suggests a walk. And he's all, the last time we did that, everyone got pissed, but she doesn't care. And off they go. And on the walk, it's mostly platitudes, although Noah does stick to gang talking points as she says she needs to figure out where she's going to live. And he very firmly says she lived with Brandon. She is still weirded out by the pressure of recovering those feelings when she might be having them for someone else. And he just tells her to figure things out with Brandon. And she's like, fine, I guess. And later, Kelly shows up at the Beat office and awkwardly stands like a football field away from Brandon. I mean, not quite, but far. And apparently she has taken her marching orders from Noah, as we hear in clip four.
Is everything okay?
Yeah. Yeah. I just need to be with you.
Such passion. Much wow. Oh my God.
The crackling chemistry of wet cardboard.
So Brandon and Kelly end up back at the Walsh house with Brandon briskly giving her the tour in clip five.
Moved you from
Minnesota. I know.
Oh, you listen. Such a good date.
I mean, first of all, gross, Brandon, but I just love that she's like, Minnesota, we fucking heard you. Love it. I mean, no. I will say Jenny Garth looks exhausted. Like the whole season so far, she just looks newborn, having tired and thoughts and prayers. This kid is like 25 now. Thoughts and prayers, etc. It's not her fault. Man, she looks like hell. And sometimes she just can't keep the impatience out of her voice. And she's like, Minnesota, heard ya.
Yeah.
Oh, you listened. Such a good date. Oh, my God. Eat all the bees, dickwad.
hey, I think I might know why she didn't want to come home with you, Dick. Anyway.
Oh, God.
She mostly wants to see their room, and the camera pushes in like 4 inches from Brandon's face. He's all taken aback about it. Like, he's all, are you sure? As if wanting to see their bedroom, where until recently her beloved teddy bear lived, is not necessarily a proposition. I'm just saying.
Well, and why is the camera so close to them both? Like,
yeah,
the emoting is not going to be any more convincing. And oh my God, his boo-boo kitty concern brows are so crazy in this episode.
Settle down. Yeah. Anyway, she's sure. And he's like, it's your home. So he walks her in, and he's lucky that the stupid dartboard is not the first thing that she sees. Like, it's your bedroom. But he starts filibustering about the decor changes that she made while she just looks around at all this unfamiliar stuff and then gets upset that she doesn't remember it. Back to David, who's apparently going to try to produce Kane Wasabel's record with his no money. Like, maybe try just failing at one thing at a time. Whatever.
Yeah, I Steve have a lot sees- of questions about what David's actual job is in David's mind.
Please. Yeah.
Actually, it's just the one question. Hey, David, what is your actual job in your mind? Do you run a club? Are you a producer? Right. Are you a manager? Uh-huh. Are you Mother Ginger and all the Paula Chanels are living in your pants that you may or may not be flapping farts out of? It's in the visual aids and I'm making my own fun. Visit them at previously.tv.
Yeah. Oh, God. So we're at the Peach Pit after dark. Steve sees Carly and he's excited to chat, but her banter back is too barbed and he slinks off sniddily. Brandon makes conversation in his absence and then ignores Carly because he's a prick and also because he's taking notes to Brandon makes conversation with David, who ignores her. No, wait, I'm so confused. My notes are so bad and I made them so long ago. Brandon makes conversation with Carly, then ignores her because he's a prick and also because he's taking notes to write about the band for the paper. I apologize.
Because now he's a music reviewer. And that's not
well,
a
everyone
conflict.
Everyone has to do anything at the beat. Carly, who, as far as we've seen, has never talked to Brandon before this moment, diagnoses him as avoiding going home. And he says the cops caught the shooter. They did. And he's awaiting trial. He is. And Kelly's in one piece, I guess. So Brandon feels like it's greedy of him to wish he had her back the way she was. Just remember that Brandon said this when we get to the next episode, because none of that turns out to be accurate at all.
Well, there are a lot of things that turn out to be not accurate, like all of them. But anyway.
God, true. So then we have to watch Brandon's black and white flashback nightmare version of Kelly shooting, and it's still funny. Sorry. He's just sat up with start when the phone rings, and it's Kelly. She tells him that he stayed with her every night at the hospital and a bunch of other times in her life, which she now knows because she's been reading her stupid Gurnal DM about American Summer and also Sarah. We'll only call it that in our visual aids file name.
Sorry.
Thank you, Sarah.
I'm not sorry at all.
No, you should. No, you're not.
No.
She says he was always there for her, which I guess means that she didn't read all the way back to the fucking fire. But she says she's trying hard to remember and then hangs up. So then Donna and David put on a whole dumb dinner date for Brandon and Kelly on the deck at the apartment. David says he has to go, but then makes promises to Donna about how much time they're about to spend with each other. So these two are already having problems again, I guess. Back to Kelly and Brandon reminiscing, though it's obviously pretty one-sided. Does remind us that Brandon doesn't dance in case we forgot, but he did dance with Kelly in high school when she dragged him onto the floor that time and they dance on the deck. Who cares? Somehow... Seeing Brandon's stupid face in his stupid paper, which we will get to, sends Kelly into a flashback to the night they got back together in season 7, and she wants to wear his ring on its fucking chain again. Elsewhere, Donna thought she and David were going to have a lovely romantic evening together and then comes home with groceries to find her living room full of a band. She wants David to tell them to leave, but David doesn't want them to sign with an established manager rather than him. And Devin, the lead singer we aforementioned, is oblivious to hints, but is ready to sign a contract for David to manage them. Great news, or is it? Clip 6.
Listen, I know what I'm signing, okay? Didn't you hear me? No one's gonna Jew me down. No one's gonna Jew me down, all right? Just trust me, I know what I'm doing. All right, just get over here.
Keeping in mind, it's sort of hard to visualize or like to explain this visually, but when Donna overhears this, she is equidistant from, or Devin is, she and Devin are equidistant from David.
Yeah.
So, and he is speaking, as you can see, he's on the phone. He's not trying to keep his voice down. Only on TV would someone 6 feet away not hear.
Yes.
This. But it's got to be an ongoing plot because they have nothing else for David to do. So he's going to have to be a moral relativist about his band's universal racism and anti-Semitism, I guess.
They really are just splashing it out in all possible directions, which is like, I mean, I guess they're equal opportunity offenders. I don't know.
I don't either. Whatever.
Speaking of dumb, then Kelly comes to see Brandon barfously, as we hear in clip 7.
Sorry if I'm interrupting. I know how you are when you're writing. Why you push your chair back and pull on your ear.
You remember?
I remember you.
And yet you're here.
I reached for my ring. For our ring. But I didn't have it.
You have it.
It's all coming back to me, Brandon. But without you, I feel more lost than ever.
Next time I put this on you, I want it to be for the rest of your life.
Can we go home?
This fucking ring. How is goddamn Hillary Swank in the opening credits and the ring somehow didn't
I
get in?
I know. Like, and what will we name it? Fugazi? Because that's... That would be my choice. Oh, God.
So ugly. On to our A plot. St. Donna busts a sweatshop with the help of the Beverly Beat and no help from Val. So remember how Val and Donna are running a personal shopping business together, LOL? Well, they're having a meeting at the Peach Pit dealing with their client lists. They've got a new guy. Cooper Hargrove. Val thinks she's heard the name and that he's an old aerospace millionaire, so Howard Hughes Jr., I guess. He needs a party planned for 200 people, and why this millionaire would go to a couple of randos and not one of Los Angeles's thousands of qualified event planners, I do not know. But Val claims her experience of running the Peach Pit After Dark has prepared her. And Donna has a new lead on a job with a clothing manufacturer. Should be totes fun. Cough. At the newspaper office, Steve is on the phone introducing himself to a potential advertiser as representing the Beverly Beat, which, yes, it already is. And the person Steve was calling apparently agrees because Steve fails to sell any ad space. And Jason Priestley is trying to type in the foreground. Okay, A, he's only striking two keys, and I made a GIF, and I believe those two keys are the escape key and the right cursor key, or possibly like the single apostrophe. It's like the worst fake typing you've literally ever seen. God.
Plus the laptop, like even open, even the bottom half is like the width of a large metropolitan area phone book. Kids, ask your parents.
So true.
It's big.
Oh my God. And the two of them are at one desk as if this isn't like a huge office full of desks and empty of any other people, whatever. There's no better way to summarize how stupid this all is, except just, oh God, clip 8.
We got 60 grand in accounts receivable. We got one shot to make this work. I gotta buy some prime home delivery lists. Hit our target audience on the doorstep, their haunts everywhere. Hey, Brent, are you with me on this?
Here's the problem, Steve. I got ideas. I got tons of ideas, but we got no statement holding this paper together. We got nothing that sets us apart.
Well, I could think of something.
Oh, God. Like, is the time to have this conversation maybe not when you think your paper's coming out, like, several days from now? Because what the fuck?
And if you have no mission statement.
What?
Yeah. And then, like, he has no mission statement. They have no staff. They don't know how to do pay stub. They don't know anything. All they have is 60 grand in accounts receivable. They're supposed to go to press in, whatever, 4 days. But whenever Kelly shows up at the office, Brandon is happy to ferry her home.
Yeah. It's no problem. He's just going to go.
Yeah.
Like, and we're about to hear, too, and Steve, in the next episode, Steve's like, I'll just give myself the day off. Like, your first issue just came out. No, you're not. You're working every day. You're working weekends. Like, that's not how any of this works.
No, it isn't.
Oh, God. Anyway, speaking of not how any of this works, when we see Donna next... she's immediately selling herself out while a guy who's interviewing her is still in the process of looking at her portfolio. Like, how many people in fashion do you think your poor dad knows, idiot? But of course, this guy thinks Donna is amazing and wants to buy her designs piecemeal. And maybe they can also structure a freelance thing. And Donna is thrilled, meeting over without any mention of money. Donna's on her way out when she passes a sign warning employees only beyond this point in both English and Spanish, so you know where this is going, and a locked door opens. A young girl is let out with what looks like a steam burn on her arm, and by that I mean Sarah.
A melted fruit roll-up was applied to her arm with saran wrap. Never has there been a better example of this show's managing to make a serious issue hilarious. Like, this is really not funny. It's a legitimate problem. No. And yet
it still is.
When I wasn't bored shitless, I was giggling because here's fucking Tori Spelling being like, and the minimum wage in this state, like, the fuck do you know about the minimum wage? Any of you?
So Donna, horrified, goes through the door and sees a lot of people working in clothing manufacturing. Maybe some are too young, but it's hard to tell. And she goes back to the fruit roll-up arm to ask if she got burned on the steam press. She says they need to get her to a doctor, but the older lady who's looking after the girl says that she'll handle it and leads her back inside because they know Donna is fucking useless, probably.
They're like, well, so then, look, any serious social crusader would wear a brassiere to interfere in our lives. So we're just going to go back inside.
Yeah. And maybe less makeup in daytime because she looks like a drag queen and not a subtle one. As you can see in the visual aids, it's all the makeup.
Yeah.
So then Val and Donna are waiting for their meeting with this Cooper Hargrove, thinking he's the old dude screaming at a chef. But of course, Cooper Hargrove is actually a young goon sitting backwards on his chair with them, which, yes, this Fonzie is captured in the visual aids.
Everybody enjoying the dogs barking?
Yep.
Yeah, sorry, guys. But it turns out the screamer is Cooper Hargrove's assistant. And lucky for Val, Cooper Hargrove is amused by Val's faux pas and then invites them to attend the party that they've planned, which is not how event planning works. Like, they'll be there or they should. But of course, they're not because none of this is how it works. This is the theme of the season, apparently.
Yeah, but when you have Val's boobs, different rules.
True. They both decline to attend, and when Cooper Hargrove takes off, Donna is shocked that Val rejected him, and I'm sure that's the end of this guy's story, JK. Later, Brandon tries to reverse psychologize some poor woman out of making her rent in clip 9.
I think you guys have some great ideas, but I've got another offer with an established paper, so...
So take it.
Brandon.
What? Let's be honest here. We don't even know if we're going to go to press. We can pay it for this issue, but there's no money in the till for the next one. All we can offer you is more input in this job than you've ever had in any job. Take it or leave it.
I'll take it.
You will?
Yes. I mean, you're honest. That's the point of journalism, right?
No.
Besides, I like you guys.
No.
I say let's give it a shot.
Great. Welcome aboard. By the way, we only have half the ads and 3/4 of the articles ready for layout.
And we still need a printer. And the deadline's end of the day tomorrow.
We all make coffee.
We all answer phones.
What about a health plan?
If one of us gets sick, the other two promise to visit.
Don't threaten me.
I mean, it's more than you get from Paul Ryan. This is all fucking absurd.
I know.
Like, you can't run a paper one issue of budget at a time. That's ridiculous. Like, he just finished saying we can, the 60 grand that they have in receivable, by the way, not even cash in the account, is going to be their whole nut to make this one issue, and they're pinning everything on it. Like, that's not how it works.
Well, and how,
it's not how any of this works.
Like, why do they have that? If the paper was so terrible that Rush had to fire everyone, and also, why did he fire everyone?
Yeah.
Just fire the EIC and the publisher and start over, not with fucking Brandon right. and Steve.
Yeah. However, I mean, Rush saying that they were all incompetent and they sucked, like, at what? And how was it possibly worse than this? Like, you can't hire people if you're not offering benefits. I mean, now you can, but then it was a lot harder. Anyway, ridiculous.
Yep.
I can't believe it worked, and I'm furious at this woman, and I kind of hate her now because she should not take this job.
Yeah. You're honest, right? Well, it's one word for it. Any hoodle.
Barf. Speaking of barf, Val comes to see Noah on the boat that he's fixing up, and they have no chemistry, so it's hard to care when she gets pissed in Clipton.
Yeah, I get it. You're busy.
So I'm taking her for a test run tonight. You know, while the water's calm. I'll catch you later. Maybe tomorrow, you know?
Or maybe never.
Look, I'm just trying to say goodnight.
Look, why don't you just be honest? I'm good for one night, but not the next, right?
Look, Val, I'm not what you think I am. You don't want me.
You want Kelly. Just say it.
It's not Kelly.
And what is it? Why are you treating me like this? Is it somebody else?
Yeah. Somebody else.
I mean, God help me for saying this, but poor Noah, seriously. She's like, you know. Yeah. Why did, just be honest with me, like, he is. He announced that he's taking mm-hmm. the boat out and that he'd like you to leave. What the fuck else do you need? Yeah. She's like, why are you doing this? Like, who cares why? Have some dignity. Yeah. His hair is combed into the shape of a Jughead cap.
Yeah. Also, you've known him for, like, a maximum a month. Like, why are you acting like he is your be all end all? Like, you don't have crackling chemistry. You clearly don't even like each other, kind of. So just because he reminds you of Dylan is not a good enough reason for all of this ridiculous, undignified behavior.
It's really not. And yet it drags on over like two episodes where her whole big conflict is like, why do I have these feelings when he's not rich? Because now she's being rewritten as this, like, single dimension gold digger. I guess we all have to live in the bell jar with her and her boobs. Worst.
Yeah.
I mean, him?
Honestly. So she leaves, he throws laundry, and she's still sitting in her car getting ready to leave and crying when she sees Noah come out and get into a Jeep. And when he takes off, she follows him. But he just ends up at some lookout point and is pissed when he sees that she followed him. And she's crying as she confronts him. Like, what? The pictures from the scene are insane. You have to see them in the visual aids. But she demands to know who this alleged other woman is, and he keeps dodging her. And he is so bad acting that he keeps letting her head block him from the camera, like he doesn't know the basics of acting on screen.
Or he knows what he looks like when he's crying and he's trying to get behind Tiffany Thiessen, which, legit. And, God, like, Valerie, if he ever wanted you at any time, he's certainly not going to now that you followed him and, like, are cry-voicing in his face again.
Mm-hmm. But she starts taunting him about being heartbroken about whoever this is because she dumped him. And he's like, I wish he had. Actually, she died right here. And then he tries to cry. As Sarah said, it is not convincing. Yells at her to get out of there. No one cares.
It's funny because it's true.
So, you know who does care about people? Donna, who's waiting outside the clothing manufacturer as people arrive for work. She is, as Sarah mentioned earlier, braless. She's there to waylay the older woman who was helping the burned girl. And this lady says the girl is better, but that Donna can't talk to her because Donna's making trouble. And they discuss that in clip 11.
Look, she's way too small to be operating that big steam press. That's why she got hurt. How old is she?
She work hard. Now no work, eat up your bills.
Well, the owner should be paying workman's comp. They can't get away with less in this country.
Few things.
Please.
Could be. Like, this PSA goes on for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I will give Tori Spelling credit. Like, she does make it sound, for this show and for this character, relatively naturalistic that she would just know what the minimum wage is A. B, mm-hmm. remember when it was $5.15 and that was like a princely sum? I used to make that at mm-hmm. the mall. Mm. And I really hope that this other woman in the scene is using her pittance earnings to get an accent coach, because who wrote that? Like, it's this weird pigeon English. It's like, I mean, it's Spanish accentry, I guess, mm-hmm. but then written as though it's a person whose first language is an Asian language. Mm-hmm. And it is not convincing at all. Like, I'm sure this actress was born in Reseda and mm-hmm. it's just really bad. Like, can you couldn't find an actual actor for the, I don't know. It's bad. It's offensive.
She also looks very much like Vanessa, the boss that took Donna to Hawaii in the season premiere, just styled differently, which is also confusing.
Oh, yeah.
They really have the same facial features. Like, she just is, you know, dressed more dowdy. I mean, I'm sure it's
yeah,
not. Yeah,
but I mean, the whole, like, no ticky, no laundry writing of this character is fucked up. And it's just like, okay, who's, you know, I think we need to be the Donnas on this storyline, except I don't care. And also it's just going to drag fucking Brabe Woodward into things. And yeah. It's fucking terrible. Well, everyone burn it down.
For sure. The other thing, though, is that Donna is acting like completely gobsmacked and shocked when she's a graduate of fashion marketing. The last class that we knew she was having the problems with Professor Big Booty Trudy was the business of fashion. Like, you cannot possibly tell me that when you're a fashion student in the 1990s in America, they never covered the issue of, like, unethical labor practices or sweatshop labor or any of this that is, like, basically what the apparel industry is built on. Like, not to say that Donna yeah. should be just rolling over with any of this, but acting like this is a huge fucking shock is not credible, even for Donna.
Yeah, even for Donna. That's the thing, that it's like, of all characters, okay.
Yeah.
It is credible that she takes it to Captain Racism Solver, right. But...
Well, we're about to
speaking
get
to of
it.
Having to live in the bell jar.
God. Indeed. So the next day, Carly and Nat are at the beat in their uniform shirts, dropping off lunch, being impressed by whatever is allegedly happening. And Steve is all, we have to get the issue out tonight. We have a deadline, as if he has the slightest idea what he's doing. Although maybe no one does. Clip 12.
I think I got a story for you.
Is it short? I'm on a deadline.
Well, I'll make it fast and hope it has a happy ending. What do you know about sweatshops?
Ew. I'm listening.
God. It's about to get so much worse, you guys do not even know.
I know.
Ugh. So,
oh, Elsa, I mean, you do know.
Right.
You do.
Across the office, Nat is trying to make Steve and Carly get past their pride and prejudice, but it turns out that when Carly actually tries to talk to Steve, what happened at the Peach Pit After Dark was that he thought she wasn't dating him because of Zach, but then he saw her at the club and thought her excuse about dating him was bullshit. And she's basically like, I'm not your type. And Steve is wondering what type of guy does get to date her. She says her guys are patient, stable, and responsible. And she actually was supposed to have a first date with such a guy tonight, but her mom can't babysit. So, of course, Steve volunteers to do it, even though he just finished saying they're on deadline for tonight. Okay. Back with Brandon. he tells Donna they'll cover the sweatshop in their next issue with more information, even though he has no way of knowing whether they'll have the money to have a next issue. Can't wait to see this fucking expose. So then Val goes back to the boat to try to talk Noah out of going back to Hawaii and also to pry about his poor dead girlfriend, Beth. No one cares. And definitely no one wants to see this goon try to cry again, but they end up making out. And Carly's date night outfit is so 90s. It is the 90s You can see it in the visual aids, including her hair. Like everything from head to toe is just like, yep, that's 1996. It's seven.
Sure is.
But Steve is refreshingly nice and not weird about doing this favor for her. And as always, he's very cute with Zach, who wishes Carly were going out with Steve instead. And Steve, the perfect babysitter every kid would want, as Sarah noted in the visual aids, lets Zach stay up the whole time and is happy to learn that Carly thinks this dude Kurt is bullshit because he gambles in Vegas all the time. He's not even responsible. And she knows that Zach didn't go to sleep on time, but she lets him tell her that Steve was a good boy, which is cute. Sorry.
Yeah, that was cute. That kid actor is so much better than they usually get. He is pretty adorable.
He is. He's very winning. Not winning the Beverly Beat cover, which is preposterous. Like, there's not even an image. It's just like a red rectangle with the new name on
That's super 90s too, though. That's like totally a thing the New York press would have done if they like couldn't get the rights to the photo they wanted. They just put like a big red triangle in the front and be like, it's the triangle issue. Like, okay.
Okay, but then Kelly is looking at it. She flips inside. Brandon's photo above his first editorial is like visible from space. His name and title are both in all caps. You can see all of this visual aids. This fucking egomaniac.
He's also wearing in this photo 78 bazillion bracelets, no undershirt, no hyphens in editor in chief.
No.
And then they cut back to Kelly, whose face slowly melts as though Jackie, who was standing next to her in an absolutely fabulous set of separates, and you could see them in the visual aids, just laid the biggest cabbage and whole milk fart. She's just like, ugh. It's like, uh-huh, exactly.
Oh,
that poof clown is your boyfriend.
I'm so mad at that layout still. I watched this episode to take these notes like before Christmas, and I'm still mad. Oh, anyway.
He's just the worst.
So Val asks Donna a bunch of dumb questions about sleeping on a boat, which Donna is hilariously incurious about, forcing Val to say that she ran out on Noah because she wanted him too much. She thinks he is poor and has no ambition because she wasn't at the club with the dudes last week to hear all about his rich parents and Harvard education. Donna urges her to hold on to what makes her happy, but Val doesn't know she can. And when we next see her, she's having wine and cheese and caviar with good old Cooper Hargrove. So put a pin in this one, or don't, because no one cares.
It's true.
All right. Who is your most valuable player?
Zach. There are literally no other choices, basically. So, Zach.
Yeah, I'm scanning through the episode. No, I'm going to say Jackie because she does dress very cute in this episode and her hair looks good.
Yeah. Okay. Fair.
All right. Least valuable player.
Oh my God. So many.
This woman who took the job at the Beverly Beat like a fucking idiot.
Whoever manufactures fruit roll-ups. Actually, excuse me, the fruit roll-ups legal team for not immediately suing when this came out. I mean, everyone's terrible. I guess technically it's Brandon and his giant brows, but let's...
Yes.
Let's go with the fruit and roll-up LLP. For not defending their brand nearly vigorously enough when whoever was covering for the makeup PA slapped a strawberry on this poor actor's arm.
I believe it's Kellogg's, so they should know better. All right.
They should.
We have a user submitted challenge. At Michael's TV Tray wants us to list five ways Dylan would have made this episode more annoying. Okay, number one, he would have been jockeying for space with Brandon in trying to get back together with Kelly.
He would have also been jockeying for space as the Beverly Beats poetry editor.
He also might have tried to like white knight them and, you know, put his own stupid money once he got it back into this other failing venture, causing problems with Brandon.
Imagine like original Dylan and China. What was it you called him? Chinatown handbag Dylan?
Something like that.
On the same screen.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Also the Dylan who stormed out of the Delicious Cumin-ery, because of finding out that they had undocumented busboys, probably would have inserted himself in the sweatshop story in some way also.
Oh yeah, true.
And that makes fun.
It sure does. Oh God. Next time on Again With This, boob cavern stuff word and, I can't read my own handwriting. assume that it's a, oh, here we go. Snarl, burn, stank face. Confuse appropriated concern trolling with journalistic ethics, and the Sanders family gets its muck raked as a result. Elsewhere, Brandon is also a bitch about Kelly getting shot, and David is a spineless moral relativist with bad credit. You'll want to charge us exorbitant interest for our visual aids, which you can see for this and every other episode on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previously.tv, and please follow this very podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm inept startup Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Labor PSA Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is such a good dude. He's David T. Cole, and he's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.